at our least put together is when we are often the most connected, right? Be willing for things to be messy. You got one precious life, and it's an opportunity to stop playing it so damn safe, and you'll be fine. Make messes. Be willing to make messes, and then trust that you can clean them up and live a little. Welcome to Making Yourself Clear. I'm Chris.
I'm Patrick.
And today we're going to talk about how to build more meaningful connections in your life.
So we live in a world where surface level connection is everywhere. We've got quick replies. We've got double taps. We've got reels. We've got polite small talk. But meaningful conversation takes intention. If we're looking to get deep with somebody, being vulnerable with someone, that takes a willingness to do so. And it takes an intentionality. So there's courage that's required. Most of all, it's going to take some practice. Mm. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So,
quick question for you. You mentioned double taps and reels.
I did.
What did you mean by double taps? Reels, are those the things that float by on the, a YouTube short or something, or Facebook?
Facebook reels. Facebook reels, TikTok, and then double taps.
What's a double tap?
Yeah. So, when you like a comment, you tap it twice and the little heart appears.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
There you go.
This is it. I'm learning about the socials today, showing my age. So, deeper conversations. What do we mean by that? We mean beyond the usual small talk.
Yeah.
Right? Like we default to talking about a handful of topics, the weather, sports, if you're into sports, politics, superficial stuff, which is fine. There's a place for that, right? It's like
absolutely
warming up a conversation. There's room for that. But
yeah,
if you're yearning for more meaningful connection, more depth, where you actually get to see deeper into what's going on for another person, or you get to share more about what's really going on for you, the stuff that matters, like your inner world, that's where intimacy gets created. And that's where meaningful connection happens. And if you're just waiting for it to be sprinkled on you by luck or the intimacy fairy, it'll happen when it does, and otherwise it won't. So we're going to talk about how you can actually consciously cultivate more of this in your life in an intentional way, because I think it's really nourishing when we get to experience that. And
yeah,
being able to create it when you want to, it's a way to squeeze more juice out of life.
Most people, truthfully, don't know how to go deep. And it's not because they don't want to. It's just because a lot of people have never been taught how to. Mm. Some people do grow up in a culture where they have that intimacy and that vulnerability, and it's modeled really well for them. Many of us have to learn how to do that.
I think that's a really good point. Whatever we grow up with, like what was normal in our family of origin, we're comfortable with that because we experienced lots of it. So if you grew up in a family where there was a lot of deep, genuine conversation, and you know your parents and siblings were comfortable expressing more vulnerable emotions, then this may be quite natural for you. But if you didn't, if it was more like stiff upper lip, and if your parents didn't have the vocabulary or the emotional range to really model that for you, then you wouldn't have learned it anywhere. You might see it in movies, or you may have had it modeled by some of the people in your life, but it's not going to be as natural because it wasn't practiced when you were in your formative years.
Yeah. So listen, you might be someone who's really good at this. You might be someone who's challenged when it comes to this particular thing. But as we explore this topic, I think there's a lot for us to learn. As Chris and I were discussing it, I felt like we had some big takeaways. So the first thing we want to talk about is there's a myth around natural deep talk, right? This idea that deep conversations just happen when things are right, when you get to know somebody. And that's not necessarily untrue, but it happens a lot less often than I think we maybe want to admit. The stars sometimes will align when you're in the right place with the right person. Suddenly, you know, you're in a diner like in the movies and you're pouring your heart out and the cherry pie is on its way and you're on your seventh cup of coffee and everything's just right in the moment. But more often than not, great conversations are created. They're not going to fall out of the sky, right? The intimacy fairy is not just going to show up.
I would add a slightly different spin on that.
Sure.
I would say sometimes they do just happen. Like you're on that perfect first date where everything's just going well and you're vibing and you're clicking, and then you end up sharing in a deep, meaningful way with this person. And so sometimes it does seem to just happen. But I think what we're offering is if we deconstruct what was it that led to that.
It didn't just happen.
It didn't just happen.
Yeah.
There are mechanisms at play. And if you understand how all of that works, then you can create it at will.
What a superpower that would be to be able to just create those authentic moments. All you really need is a willingness to show up with a little more vulnerability than maybe you usually show up with.
That's a lot of it. Yeah. But we don't want to oversimplify, right? Like it's such a human connection is such a complex.
There's a lot to unpack
multivariate
here.
Thing.
Yeah.
In other episodes, we've had like a 5-part framework for giving feedback or the 7 steps to a really good apology.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot more art than science. And there's no checklist on this one necessarily.
Yeah. This is going to be a lot of feeling things out. There's going to be murkiness. There's going to be weirdness. And a lot of it is just like learning to be uncomfortable. Mm. And learning to ride that discomfort and silences and pauses into a more deep connection. So
yeah, and it's less about a formula and it's more about, it's a thing to practice and to explore and to learn the nuances and contours of experientially as you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give you some trailheads and some on-ramps and ways to access it and things to look for and experiment with. Our hope is that by coming at this from enough angles and exploring it in different ways, what will emerge out of that is some kind of map of the territory that's useful.
So why is this important? Why does this even matter? First of all, we're more connected now than we ever have been. And studies show that people are lonelier now than ever with all of that connection. A lot of the ways in which we connect are very superficial. Right? It's very surface level. And people are craving things that are deeper. They're craving a realness. When I look at the people that I follow, even my friends online, that Instagram feed, that TikTok feed, that Facebook feed, those are all curated. Those are all moments that they've decided to share with me. There's a performance there, right? There's some reality there as well, but it's not steeped in realness. And then the other thing that happens is a lot of what we get is small talk. And again, there's a time and place for small talk. That's not what we're saying, that you should never, you know, lead with that, but most people don't want another person just giving them a, hey, how was work today? Or nice weather we're having. They want something like, how are you actually doing? They want space to say the things that they wouldn't normally say to other people. People are craving somebody that they can be real with. They can be their authentic self with. And within that disconnect, within that those online personas, that's getting more and more difficult. So that's what we're going to explore in this episode, right? How to be that someone for the people in your lives.
Yeah. I think a lot of us are waiting for someone else to go first or waiting to get that signal that this is going to be a deeper kind of conversation. Like we want an invitation and a sign that it's safe. So let's talk about how to create those conditions.
How do you get to a space where you can truly be your authentic self with someone? And there's so much freedom in being able to express yourself with that way.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is learning, like Chris said, learning the signs, how to recognize when a conversation wants to go deeper.
That's a good point, right? Because it's so much nuance to this.
Mm.
We talked about creating this kind of conversation, but it's also about, it's not like you can just flip a switch. You don't want to force or push a conversation beyond the level of depth that your counterpart's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So you're as much reading the vibe and reading the room. It's a combination of leading, but also reading the room.
Yeah.
You can read what's there, look for an opening, and then lead it in a deeper direction, and then check in and see what the response was. Is this person, are they meeting me at that level of intimacy, and are they following, or are they making a counteroffer? None of this is said explicitly, typically.
Yeah.
But are they breaking the tension with a joke? Are they kind of
right
paring it away, or are they matching your level of depth and emotionality?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, stepwise, you make a bid for a deeper connection and you see if they respond in kind. If they meet you there, then great, you've just gone deeper.
Yeah. And there are some ways that we can create those conditions,
mm-hmm.
right? Like we said, this is intentional. This is you setting things up. Part of it is reading social cues. Some people aren't great at reading social cues. If you have difficulty reading social cues, if that's something that you struggle with, that doesn't mean that this isn't going to work for you, right? There are solutions to that problem too. Before we get into the topic of going deep with somebody, let's just do a quick reflection. Think back to a conversation that you have had recently, something that really stuck with you, something where something shifted, where your understanding shifted, where your connection shifted, where you felt someone else's heart. And ask yourself, what made that conversation feel different? You know, what was said? What was allowed to be said? What space was made, right? And what made that matter?
I've got one that pops to mind right away. I was at a party 5 years ago and was meeting some friends. One of the friends that met us there brought a friend of hers, and I ended up sitting on the couch next to this woman who I just met, and it's at this party. There's disco dance music playing in the background.
Right.
And she looks at me and says, can I ask you like an unusually deep question? I was like, yeah. She said, do you think about death a lot? And as it turns out, I do. And I was like, yeah, I do. And then we spent an hour or two just exploring death at a party that was like, it was bouncy disco house in the background. And we're talking about death on the couch, but it made for a wonderful connection. And like, unsurprisingly, we ended up dating. So
there you go.
But that one jumped to mind. And it was like, it was an invitation into a very different kind of conversation from what you would default to at a party.
Very cool. So let's get into the why not, because before we can go deep, we need to understand what stops us, right? So why are we not going deep? What stops us from going deep? So it's not a lack of time. We've got time to talk to people, right? Yeah. We've got space online. It doesn't have to be face-to-face. You can have an online conversation that can be intimate as well. It's not that we don't have anything to say. So really, it's that we're up against a handful of really visceral human blocks.
Mm-hmm.
So let's break a couple of them down.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Fear of vulnerability is probably the biggest one.
There you go.
To the surprise of no one. So there's the emotional blocks. And then I would say that some of it is just we don't know how, or we're not practiced at actually initiating this. And it feels scary and weird. And we don't take it any further than that. That ends the analysis because nope.
Yeah.
We just opt out. Vulnerability is a word you hear a lot lately. And there's a lot of personalities that talk about it, like Brene Brown. If you haven't seen her Netflix special, she does an hour and a half. It's like an hour and a half long Netflix TED talk on vulnerability. Masterful. Absolutely brilliant. So she's worth checking out. But what do we mean by vulnerability? What is that actually? Because it's a word that gets used a lot.
Right.
What does it mean?
Let's unpack it.
Yeah. It's a fear of something, right? So you're exposing something about yourself that's maybe personal. You've got some intense emotions around.
Right.
And I would say a lot of it's fear of judgment.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to expose something to you that maybe isn't, it's not the polished resume LinkedIn version of me. It's something real. It's maybe a part of myself I'm not proud of, or feelings I've had that I'm not sure it's safe to express because I don't know how you're going to react. You might judge me. It's a feeling we're afraid of.
Mm.
Right. So I like to do this thought experiment whenever there's fear. It's what is the thing that you're afraid will happen? What's the bad thing you're afraid will happen?
Mm.
It's not always obvious why we're afraid. What is the thing that would happen, right? So let's say I open up and I spill my guts out and I share with you a painful experience or an embarrassing experience or something. How is this going to play out? You're not going to physically harm me, probably. So I'm not afraid of physical harm.
Nope.
Maybe you'll laugh at me. Maybe you'll reject me. Maybe you'll judge me.
Mm, judgment, yeah.
But then I could equally ask, so what? So what if another human forms a judgment? We judge each other all the time. We're constantly judging each other. And mostly nothing comes of it.
Yeah.
Right. And if I think about in a given day, if I'm out in the world, how many judgments waft through my consciousness about random strangers? Dozens, maybe hundreds.
Right.
But how much do I care about any of them? I don't care about those judgments. And so they should care even less, whatever noise I have in my head.
Yeah.
So why does this matter?
I think it comes back to something you said earlier in a podcast recently about rejection, right? About being ostracized, about being made not part of the group anymore.
Oh, the historical evolutionary piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to just unpack for that for us again, for anyone who didn't watch our last episode.
Yeah. There are good historical reasons for this if you look at it through an evolutionary lens. So most of early human history for millennia, we grew up in lived in these tribes of 50 to 150 people out there in a very dangerous world. And we relied on the tribe for our survival.
Yeah.
And so if you were rejected by the tribe and kicked out of the tribe, in the worst case, you'd be dead within a week.
Being kicked out of the tribe or being ostracized is akin to death.
Yeah. Hardwired to almost equate social rejection with death. Mm. So that's, I think, a big part of the reason why we're so terrified of it. So part of it is reminding yourself that that's no longer the case, right? Social rejection does not mean death anymore. Mostly, right? Unless you're on a ship and they make you walk the plank or something, but leave that cruise line a very negative Yelp review.
Maybe just make small talk on those kinds of cruises.
So the reminder that like I'm not physically going to be harmed here is one thing, but that's not to say there aren't actual stakes. If this is a close friendship or a relationship that matters to you, then you might be afraid of altering the relationship or even losing it in some way. And that's a fear.
Right.
That's valid. But here's the thought experiment on that one.
Yep.
Think of a time when somebody close to you had the courage to open up and share something really vulnerable with you. Did it even occur to you to react to them the way that you're afraid they're going to react to you?
Brilliant. Yeah.
Probably not.
Probably not.
When someone that we love or that we care about, or even just someone we know, when they open up and they're genuinely vulnerable, for most of us, the instinct is to want to connect with them and to be like, personally, I feel honored that they would feel safe enough with me to do that.
Yeah.
And if anything, like, I want to hold that sacred, and I want to hold space for them, and I want to show them, like, yes, I'm a safe person for you to be vulnerable with.
Yeah.
And I'm drawn closer to the person, and it triggers all of my empathy and all of my compassion, and like the best parts of me come online. And so it's quite the opposite of the thing we're afraid of.
I can't think of any time where I have shared something with a person and been vulnerable where I've gotten back what I was afraid of. In every case that I can think of, it has deepened the connection. They have shown genuine care for me, and I've walked away feeling like it was worth saying or doing. But that doesn't make it any less intense, and that doesn't make it any less scary to open up. And it takes real courage, right? And it's been said that courage is being afraid to do something and then going ahead and doing it anyway.
Well, that's it. No fear, no courage.
Yeah.
Courage is acting in the face of fear. It's not the absence of fear.
Yeah.
I also heard a interesting little soundbite on confidence. Confidence equals fear plus survival. So in other words, do the thing you're afraid of and notice that you survived it, and then it's less scary the next time.
So a lot of fears, fear of rejection, fear of being made fun of, fear of not getting anything back. What if I say this thing and they just don't say anything or they don't care? There's a lot of potential pain points with fears. So you're pushing through that. What are some other blockages? I think another one we touched on a little earlier when we were talking about this is a lack of modeling, right? Not having somebody who has done this well in our own lives. It's difficult to do something that you've never seen done well, or that you've never experienced properly, or that you've never seen at all. So if you didn't grow up in a home where people talked about feelings, where they didn't share hard truths with one another, if people sat in silence instead of having deep conversations, it may feel foreign to you. But here's the thing, you don't need a perfect example. You need a willingness to do this. You need that courage. And then you just need to be able to practice it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've got another one.
Yeah.
For much of my life when I was younger, I was in this camp that we're describing. I didn't know how to talk about feelings. And I was insecure, and I was afraid of being made fun of.
Mm.
Like talking about as a kid growing up, kids can be brutal to each other.
100%.
And they can pick on each other. And if you show weakness or if you show vulnerability, that's equated to weakness. And then you're singled out. And that's like a strong negative association you make for showing vulnerability. So you learn to put up walls and put up defenses and become guarded. And then as I started to consciously cultivate deeper connections with people and expose myself to communities where this kind of thing was modeled, what I noticed happening was I had groups of people in my life that were safe to be vulnerable with. And then when I was interacting with people in those groups, I would show up and be wide open and go deep because I knew it was okay.
Right.
And then other people in my life that I had never had that depth of conversation with, so I put them in the shallow category or the...
Oh, so you're making judgments about who was okay to
exactly
have different kinds of relationships.
Exactly.
With.
And I wrote off that possibility with certain people in my life just because I'd never experienced it with them.
I'm curious, did at any point you make a conscious effort or decision to go deep with someone who you had put in that camp?
Yeah. And they met me there every time that I can think of, right? I can't think of an example where I tried and it wasn't met with a surprising willingness to meet me there. And it was almost like the experience I had was that they were just waiting. They've been wanting this kind of connection with me for so long. Maybe they had put me in the same box in their mind
as
not a safe person to go deep with, because it would have been equally valid. One of us had to go first. And then the other one was like, yes, somebody has to. And if you're both waiting for the other one to go first, you might be waiting a while.
Yeah. What are some other blockages? What else gets in the way?
I would say just not having had the experience of doing it. This is very much the kind of thing you learn by doing. And it's not just what to say, although there are ways into a conversation like this in terms of what to say, but you're also practicing dancing in a in unfamiliar emotional spaces. We're all comfortable with the talking about the weather or the news.
Mm-hmm.
That's so well practiced and it's familiar. But comfort doesn't mean safety. It just means familiar. Yep. It means you've experienced it before and you can predict, you know that you're going to be okay however it goes.
So then to that end, if I'm practicing going deep and being vulnerable and with people that I trust mm-hmm. and made those connections with, it too will start to become familiar.
Yeah. This is the kicker. Is the first time you make a bid to go deeper with somebody, you don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
But the only way to know how it's going to go, the only way to become more comfortable and familiar with it is to do it. You do it once, it goes well. Oh, and you do it again and it goes well. And then it can become the kind of experience that's normal to you. And then it feels just as safe as talking about the weather. But the first time you do it, it won't. And the first 10 times you do it, it might not. But it's absolutely worth it to cultivate this as a place you feel comfortable hanging out.
And I would say that, you know, a lot of people are worried about risk. One of the benefits that you gain from this is, yes, there's some risk involved. Yes, you might face rejection or ridicule or whatever else. But that also sets you up to know who gets put in those boxes that you mentioned, right?
You can have more depth with way more of the people in your life than you think. That, I can promise you.
I would agree wholeheartedly with that. There are more people who are willing to go there with you than not.
Then you know, yeah. And the other question about risk is, what's the risk if you don't?
Yeah.
We don't know how much time we have with the people we love. And like one of the biggest tragedies is someone close to you, maybe they die suddenly or unexpectedly. And you don't want to live with the regret of, man, I wish I'd shared more with that person.
Yeah.
I wish I'd opened up more. Or on your own deathbed, looking back saying, why did I hold back? What was I so scared of?
I often say to people, you know, the things that you don't say to the ones that you love are things that they don't know. Like if you don't say it, they don't know it. We talked a lot about fear. We talked about lack of models. I talked about dropping the mask earlier as well. So that's a way that we can become vulnerable, is dropping the mask. Sometimes we're so used to just being entertaining or being helpful or being on, being the person that we think everyone knows us to be, that we don't know how to be real, right? So when I say dropping the mask, what I mean is being authentic, being yourself, not being the version of yourself that you think other people want, or the funny person, or the person who's entertaining, but like someone who is really truly in the moment and able to share about themselves.
There's a great quote about most of what we do is confirm for one another that our masks are on straight.
All right. Listen, performance is great. It's seductive. It's sexy. It gets laughs. It gets you attention, but it doesn't help you build intimacy, and it doesn't help you build an authentic connection with a person. And to go deep with a person, you have to be willing not to be impressive, but rather to be ordinary and to be honest and to be messy.
To be real. Performance doesn't necessarily mean phony. Sometimes it is.
Sure.
But it can also just mean superficial, right? Like there's a gear that we're comfortable with. And I think this differs along gender lines too. I think I'm going to make a general statement here and with all the usual caveats. But I think women in general are much better at having real conversations with each other than men, just in terms of how we're socialized.
Yeah, I would say that my experience has been that that's the case as well. One, genuine, authentic connection is not modeled well. Two, we are conditioned socially not to do that, not to reveal our weaknesses or our vulnerabilities.
Because it's not seen as masculine or manly, and if you're vulnerable, that's weak, or it's... I think that that's starting to change.
There's a shift.
Those older stereotypes about masculinity, like boys don't cry and suck it up, and men are allowed to express one emotion, which is anger, but only then in certain circumstances and in particular ways.
Yeah.
You can pound the table in the boardroom and now you're the alpha male leader, or, you know, you can yell at someone to get what you want, and it's not the whole story.
No, not at all.
And it's letting go of looking good.
Yeah, that's a huge part of it.
Right? We do so much impression management where we're presenting ourselves in such a way as to look good, whatever good means in the given setting. You want to look funny, or you want to look charismatic, or you want to look put together.
Yeah. You want to be nurturing. You want to be smart. You want to be...
whatever that is.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. But if it's managed, that's, I think, goes back to what you were saying about how it's a bit performative.
It's a bit performative. I mean, it doesn't mean it's not authentic and it's not who you are, but it's not all of who you are.
Right. It's the highlight reel. It's back to social media,
back
and
to
it's the vacation photos and the gourmet dinner.
And it's that curated version of you that you want everyone to see. It's not disingenuous, but
it's just selective.
It's selective.
And it's managed. It's like I'm deliberately putting forward a particular persona. And sometimes that's appropriate.
Sure.
But like in a job interview, you don't necessarily want to burst into tears.
Yeah. No, you don't want to reveal all the warts in a job interview. That also doesn't mean that you can't be authentic with the people that you work with, but mm-hmm. there's a time and a place for that as well.
So difficulty dropping the mask. Fear of looking bad or not looking good.
Mm-hmm.
And also just lack of practice. That's going to be a theme that runs through this, is just not having had the experience of doing it.
And getting it, giving yourself the opportunity and the permission to get that experience.
That's right.
Other things that block people, emotional bandwidth. I don't have the time the energy to deal with this. I had to work today, managing my own mental health, managing my own emotional bandwidth. Maybe my family has some things that they're going through, and I just don't have the capacity right now to go deep with another person, to bear witness to their vulnerable state or their authentic self, or to reveal that about myself, because I'm trying to keep it all together right now. And if I have an authentic conversation or an authentic moment, I'm just going to fall apart.
Might break down.
Yeah, I might break down. So some days you're just running on fumes and you're too tired, you're too tapped, you're too spent.
That can go both ways. You need to be so depleted of resources that you can't hold the mask up anymore.
Right.
And it just kind of falls.
Yep.
And then finally the tears come out and you know, next thing you know, you're whatever it is, you're sitting next to your best friend and you're kind of crying into a pillow. And finally this thing you've been dying to share with someone, anyone.
Yeah.
Comes out. Yeah. And a lot of this, I think, has to do with agency and choice. If you have the ability to go deep and you just choose not to in a particular situation, there's a way that that can be a conscious choice.
Sure.
But if that's always the choice you make and you've never made the other choice,
that tells you something about yourself, for sure.
You might be lying to yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't have a driver's license, you're not choosing to take the bus.
Another way in which we can feel blocked in being authentic and being vulnerable with people is we often wait for permission to have those kinds of talks, right?
Totally.
And you mentioned that earlier, it's like being the first.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm the first, someone might have had that longing for a really long time. Like, oh, I really wish that I could talk to Chris about this thing, but I don't know if he's going to laugh at me or if he's going to, I don't know if I can trust the space. And if I just speak authentically, that might just unlock that for the other person. So a lot of times we're waiting for permission. It's subtle, but it might be one of the biggest reasons why. So
sure.
You talked about fear being one of the biggest ones. I would say that this is maybe in contention for number one.
Very much in the same ballpark,
yeah.
Right? You're waiting for a sign that this is okay, an invitation or permission,
mm-hmm.
but the other person might be waiting for permission from you as well. So somebody has to go first.
Yeah. Nobody wants to make it weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so how do you do this, right? There's a million ways. You can just ask, like, are you open to talking about something a little bit deeper or a little bit more? I have something to share with you and it's a bit vulnerable.
Right.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
You can explicitly ask for permission. That's one way to do it. Another way that we kind of can gauge permission without explicitly asking, if you want, is make baby steps towards it. You can inch towards a thing by making a little bit, by modeling it, by saying something a little bit deeper, like, hey, you know what? I've been feeling sad lately. That's not super vulnerable. It's more vulnerable than, how about those maple leaves? Right.
Yeah.
But and then see how they respond. Like if they brush past it, like, yeah, I'm sad about the leaves too. Ha ha.
Right.
Okay. So that bid was, they didn't meet you there.
Right.
And then maybe that's as far as you have to go, right? You didn't risk anything huge. You hinted at a desire to go deeper, and then you watched for their response. Whereas in contrast, if they pause and their tone shifts and they get more present and they say, oh, well, tell me about that. Like, what's, do you want to talk about it? What's on your mind? That's permission. Conversations, there's a dance that we do, right? There's the content of the conversation, the actual things we're saying and doing, but then there's the underlying, what's the connection dance? You want to read what's happening in the relational space, and you can make a bid to go deeper. If I say, I've been feeling kind of sad lately, I'm not just sharing that because it's a fact.
Right.
It's been really cloudy lately. That's also a fact. But what I'm doing is I'm testing the waters. I'm saying, like, I want to share something with you that's a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
Are you open to going there with
me? Are you a safe person to share this with right now?
Can
we engage in this dance? And
yeah. And I think one of the points here is that this isn't necessarily an all or nothing thing. And there are ways to just dip a toe in the water and you can inch towards it. So that maybe
that helps with the fear and
It helps de-risk it a little bit and makes it a thing you can titrate, you can play with in a way that's more subtle and safer.
So now that we've unpacked all of those different blocks, right? We talked about waiting for permission. We talked about fear. Is there one that resonated for you? Which one of these blocks shows up for you the most, right? Mm. Take a second and reflect. What are you afraid might happen if you went there with someone close? What's the thing that you're so afraid of?
And is that a valid fear? And
does it hold water?
Is it likely to happen?
Right.
Or would the person have to be an absolute monster to respond that way? And do you really think they are that monster? And if not, then this is really unlikely. And
if so, why are they in your life? Why are you hanging around with monsters?
That's also a fair question. So some of them can be debunked based on just extreme unlikelihood of outcome.
Yeah.
Another way to take some of the sting off is, okay, say they did react in the way that I'm afraid of. Like, let's say it passes the first gate where it's not preposterous that they would respond that way. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So what? Then what? Would you survive that? Is that an experience you can handle?
Right.
Because you can handle what's, like, you will physically survive, almost certainly, unless they're going to attack you violently, which they probably won't.
Likely not going to happen.
So you're going to...
And again, if you're hanging out with those kinds of people, why?
Why? Yeah. So you're going to survive physically. So what is it that you're actually afraid of? You're afraid of an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to look at you a certain way, or they're going to say a certain thing. Maybe they'll laugh. Maybe they'll ignore you, or maybe they'll be awkward and change the subject. And then you'll feel something.
Yeah.
But the punchline is, it's something you've already felt. Otherwise, you wouldn't be afraid of feeling it. We can't be afraid of feelings we haven't yet had.
Yeah.
And every time you've had that feeling in the past, you survived it. So that's another frame on it, which is, even in the worst case, like, I'll have a feeling that's uncomfortable and then I'll be fine.
And I'll be okay. So one last thing to reflect on, if you're avoiding going deep with someone, if you're avoiding being vulnerable with someone, what might you gain if you just leaned into it?
Yeah. The first question we just were engaging with is, what are the things that get in the way? Why do we avoid going deeper with someone? Mm-hmm. What if we flip that and say, okay, what are the things that make it possible? What are the conditions that facilitate these deeper conversations?
So what do we need in order to create space for depth and vulnerability?
First one, I think, is emotional safety, or sometimes it's called psychological safety. Maybe those are two slightly different things, but it's that feeling that this will be safe. And what's the source of safety is another good question. Over time, when you've had repeated conversations and experiences with someone that went well, then that's evidence for safety and you become conditioned to know that this is a safe person to do that with. But
right.
You don't get that the first time.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the first time, what would create safety? Well, you might have evidence. You may have seen this person be very nurturing with others, and then you get the sense that, oh, this is probably a safe person to be that way with.
Yeah.
Another source of safety is that it comes from within. And that's, I think, the much more reliable one, a deep knowledge within yourself that you can handle whatever emotional space you may have to navigate in the conversation.
Right.
And that allows you to bring the safety. Mm. Now it's safe because you don't require them to show up a certain way or respond a certain way or to do or not do any particular thing. You're just safe. You've got that deep, grounded, from within sense of safety. And that's when you're bulletproof.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of ways to arrive at that deep sense of comfort and like rock solidness in yourself. If you open up and you make a bid to be vulnerable and somebody reacts in a negative way, some way other than how you wanted, they laugh, they shut down, they get awkward. Recognize that doesn't mean anything about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That says more about them.
It says
if they change the subject or crack a joke, that's just a reflection that they're not comfortable with that level of intimacy. Doesn't mean anything about you, doesn't mean anything about the relationship, and it's still okay. It's okay to make a bid for connection and have that bid rejected. It's a perfectly safe thing.
We have to understand too, like, sometimes that's how people deal with tension. Maybe we can push past that. Maybe you're not interested in going past that. Maybe that tells you everything you need to know. You get to make those decisions. What else do we need in order to create connection? So we talked about emotional safety. The next thing we need is we need presence. We need people to be present. We need to be present. So it's going to require attention, right? So no distractions. We don't have phones going off. We don't have televisions on, or if we do, we're ignoring it. We're mindful of the space that we're in, like your party, like you talked about, right?
Right.
So you're on the couch.
Well, that was an interesting one because we were present with each other and there's lots of noise and people dancing in the background, but we were still just very much tuned into each other in the conversation. And there was a presence. It was like we had carved out our own little world with a backdrop of a crowd, which you can do.
I feel like that often happens. Like when I feel like I have that safety that you talked about, that emotional safety, then the rest of the world can be doing whatever they're doing and it just falls away. And I'm just in that moment. What presence is not is us waiting for our turn to speak, us waiting for our turn to give advice, us looking to be so smart.
You're not in your head thinking about what you're going to say.
Yeah.
You quiet your mind and your attention is on the other person with curiosity. We did an episode on the 5 levels of listening, which it might make sense to link to here because
we
go much deeper into levels of listening and presence. And you want to bring your A game. To the other person, but also like be present in your own body and in your own experience. A lot of the time we walk through life just living in a world of thought. You call it being in your head.
Yeah.
Right. You're in this conceptual, intellectualized realm and you're not actually in touch with what you're feeling in your body and in your emotions. And emotions are physical sensations.
Yeah.
We feel them in our bodies. So it's like a mindfulness thing. Dropping into what's going on with you and then sharing it with someone else. If you're not in touch with yourself, then you have a superficial, shallow relationship to yourself. And you can't possibly go deep with someone else when you're shallow with yourself.
If you don't know yourself, then how is anyone else going to know you?
I would say it slightly differently because knowing yourself, again, there's a risk of it going back into a head type knowledge, right?
Okay.
Being aware of what your experience is on a deeper level. Because that's what you want to share with the other person. It's not so much a story about something. I can share with you about a painful experience that happened. I can say, I was dating this person and she broke up with me.
Right.
And I can just describe it very factually and be completely out of touch with my feelings.
Right. And then that's not very authentic for me.
That's not necessarily vulnerable. Yeah. It's like, oh, here's a thing that happened, by the way. And, the Jays lost last night.
Right. Yeah. And it's just sort of a story. Yeah.
Or I can actually be in touch with how that felt. And I can share from that place and say, I'm heartbroken.
Right. And there's a very different experience.
And now I'm sharing my feelings, my experience, not just the facts of it. And it's not an intellectualized story. It's I'm in touch with my feelings and I'm willing to experience them in your presence.
Yeah. We have a dear friend who he always says, like, in order to get out of your head, stop looking up. Start looking down, hand on your chest and feel what's in here and resonate with what's authentic. Because when we look up and that's where all the thoughts are dancing.
Yeah, we're looking for concepts and thoughts up here, but you want to come down into your body and get in
grounded.
Touch with what you're experiencing. Because whatever you're experiencing is inside your skin. It's not up there.
I can remember actually, I was speaking with him and sort of looking up and thinking, he said, what are you looking at? what's up there? We talked about having difficult conversations in a different episode as well. And part of that was openness and a willingness to be in an uncomfortable space. And when I say openness, sometimes people confuse openness with being in agreement with a person, right? So I'm not talking about being in agreement. We don't have to be agreeable. In order to be open, we just have to make room for their experience.
And what do we mean when we say being open to someone else's experience? If we double click on that,
just listening to whatever it is that they have to share without judgment,
or without trying to fix it or change
it,
especially if someone's in an uncomfortable emotional state, there can be this habit of, oh, it'll be okay, or it's going to be okay, or oh, they're in a better place, or like saying something to try to diffuse it. I would say being open to someone's experiences, just being willing to be with them in it without requiring anything to change. And it's like the underlying message, whether you say it explicitly or whether it's just in between the lines, is I'm here for you. I'm willing to witness you in this experience and nothing has to change.
Right.
It's okay for you to be experiencing whatever you're experiencing and I'm here for it. And I have the capacity to just be with you in this discomfort and nothing has to change. You're having a human experience that is perfectly appropriate given what you're sharing, and this is safe. It's safe for you to be this real with me. And I think a critical component to that is not requiring any of it to change. And it sounds so simple. That's what's so rare, is just being able to be with somebody, whatever experience they're having, and not needing anything to be different. Like, you're absolutely fine as you are right now, and I love you. No conditions. If you can get there and practice being in that place, such a gift.
Yeah. What other conditions do we need in order to be to make space for vulnerability? That's a great one.
I mean, there's some practical stuff, right? Like time. Mm-hmm. If you're wanting to have a lengthier conversation with somebody, you want to make sure you're not in a rush, you're not on the way out the door.
Right. So being right?
Like the obvious practical considerations.
Yeah. So just being real about that, right? Yeah. Hey, listen, I don't actually have time for this right now, but I do want to have this conversation with you when I'm not running out the door late for work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I remember I had a call coming up in like 15 minutes. And when I was dating at the time, we were kind of co-working from her place out of different rooms. And it was like this brief break in between calls. And she brought something up that was, in my view, it was quite likely that it was going to escalate into an argument.
Right.
And I was like, do you really want to bring this up right now with the 8 minutes? And it was like, oh, you're right. Pause. Yeah. We'll come back to this.
Yeah. I mean, that takes a lot too, right? That takes an authentic relationship to be able to say like, hey, listen, I do want to have this conversation with you. This is not a time that's going to work. Can we just hit the pause button and not get heightened about that and not get agitated or activated about the fact that like, I can't speak to you about this right now. It's not that you're not important. It's not that this is not important. There's just like, life is in the way right now.
Yeah. And it could be you don't have a lot of time, or it could be like, you're in the middle of making dinner, or you've got toddlers running around, and it's like, create the physical conditions and the logistical conditions that are workable for this kind of conversation.
Well, because if we have a stressful environment, that can hijack the conversation too, right? That can...
Or even just the distraction of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Absolutely. Here's something kind of pragmatic. This may or may not be comfortable for you or applicable or appropriate in all of your relationships, but like, there are things you can do to really drop into a conscious shared space with somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're someone who has done breathing exercises or meditation, and if that's like a shared thing, or even if it's not, you can suggest it and see if the other person is open to it. But like, we've had calls where there's a conscious intention to open up and be real within in a group of other people.
Yep.
And we would start the call with just acknowledging, like, we've all just come here from whatever our busy day was, and our minds are probably half on, you know, traffic or work or dinner or whatever it is.
Yep.
Stop. And then everyone take a few deep breaths. You can just close your eyes and take like 5 or 6 deep breaths with the intention of just down-regulating your nervous system, dropping in, releasing all of that noise and stress. And you can do like a 2-minute little breathing meditation. And then when you open your eyes, you're naturally more present. You can shift gears consciously with the person. And it's like, okay, now I've shaken off whatever was on my mind from before, and it's a conscious way to shift context and drop in.
Yeah, that's a great one. Another one that we've done, just giving people a minute to say whatever is present for them currently, because sometimes if I don't speak it out loud, it just lives in my head. It's just there, and I can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
So just giving people the opportunity to just say, hey, this is in my space right now, and I need to just speak it and get it out. And now that I've said it, I can pick it up later.
And the key there is, as you're doing that, you're not saying it in order to fall down the rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's crucial.
You're not getting hooked into the thing you're sharing. You're just putting it down. Like, it's like writing a to-do list, so you don't have to remember what you need to buy. It's just, I'm naming what's in my space and releasing it. That'll help drop you into being present as well. But the point there is, there's a conscious thing you can do to get present.
Yeah.
You're not going to do this on a first date with somebody, likely, unless if you're coming out of a workshop where you had done this. Like, if you know that this is a shared technique, then great. Then it's not weird.
We also talked about a willingness to be uncomfortable, willingness to be in the moment. Let's just like dive into that
huge.
A little
this
bit.
Is so much of it is this.
Yeah.
It's really worthwhile to fundamentally rewire your relationship to discomfort.
Yeah.
And I guarantee there are domains in life where you've already done this. if you exercise with any intensity, it's uncomfortable.
Right.
But it's fine. You get used to it. And it's like discomfort isn't the same as pain. But even like when I'm lifting weights, if it's an intense workout, there can be pain, but pain isn't the same as suffering.
Right.
Right. And discomfort doesn't have to be the same as suffering. Like any exertion of effort or leaning into the unfamiliar is going to have discomfort. And that's fine. Growth and discomfort go together. You can't have growth and comfort simultaneously. You might have uncomfortable feelings yourself, or the other person might. And then your discomfort is just being with them in that experience. You want to normalize that.
Yeah. That comes back to that openness piece, right?
Yeah.
Just whatever is happening in this moment is okay.
Not only is it okay, I'll take it a step further and say like the connection you're seeking in large part is because through the experience of going deeper with somebody, you're both willing to be uncomfortable together. Mm. And that's the bond.
Yeah.
If this was easy, it wouldn't create the depth and the intimacy that it does. There's something special about it. The people in your life that you are willing to have these deeper conversations with are special to you because of the discomfort, not in spite of it.
That discomfort, it's not something that's going wrong.
It's a sign that things are going right.
Yeah.
Talked about conditions, right? The conditions for a deeper conversation, and maybe it's worth summarizing. Safety, presence, openness, patience, and a willingness to be uncomfortable, and a recognition that it probably will be uncomfortable, but that's okay. That's the magic. That's the secret sauce. And this doesn't have to be perfect. Like this can be, there's an expression I picked up somewhere, but it was like, just be willing to fumble fuck your way forward and trust that it's going to be okay. It can be awkward and it can be however it's going to be. And this is not about perfecting something. It's about being willing to be imperfect.
Yeah, I don't imagine that you'll ever get perfect when it comes to vulnerability and sharing things and going deep with a person. It's probably always going to be a practice.
Well, and the moment it starts to feel too safe, it's no longer vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because some people are really comfortable sharing things that are super personal, where you or I might watch them sharing that. And to us, it would be super vulnerable, but to them, maybe it's not.
Yeah.
So this is also quite subjective. And what feels vulnerable to you might not feel vulnerable to someone else and vice versa. But what makes it vulnerable is if you're afraid.
Right.
If there's no fear, it's not vulnerable.
But then as you're getting comfortable with sharing those sorts of things, if it no longer feels awkward or uncomfortable, that just means you're getting better at having deeper conversations, and you've
expanded the palette of experiences you can share with another person and have it feel natural. So that's not to say that as you get more comfortable sharing more personal things, you're not losing out on the depth of connection. It's just once you acclimate to a certain level of disclosure and transparency, then the goalposts move, which is fine. It means you now have a bigger playground you can play in. And then the next step is, okay, well,
how do we?
Where's the edge? And where can I push the edge a little further? Can I get a bit edgier? And that's what keeps it fun and exciting. One of the things that can suck the passion out of a romantic relationship over time is you get too safe.
Right.
Right? Things start to feel too normal with a person. But that's just because we stop trying to explore the edges. We carve out whatever the conversational relational space is with a person. And then we just hit the cruise control.
Yeah, we know where the safe parameters are.
And we just stay in our lane, and you wonder why 10 years later, when you've been in cruise control on a long straight highway,
you're bored.
The view starts to get boring.
Yeah.
But there's an edge. There's always another edge. And if you push that edge a little bit and open up and are willing to be more vulnerable, notice how that affects your level of excitement in the relationship and attraction and passion, and all of these things can come back to life if you keep looking for the edge and pushing it a little further.
We did a reflection the last time. Let's do another one here. Where in your life do you have people who you feel emotionally safe with? Mm-hmm. And how did they build that safe container for you? Like what are the ingredients? Maybe you can pinpoint that. But
right.
Who are the people you feel safe with, and how do they make you feel that way?
Mm. Maybe it's the same question, just phrased another way, but who are the people in your life with whom you feel the most like yourself?
Mm.
Right, yeah. Where you feel the most freedom to be yourself or to express more of your inner world. Who are those people? It could be a best friend. It could be a romantic partner, a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are the people who just make you feel at ease?
Where you're at ease.
Yeah.
And you know that whatever whatever you're experiencing, it's safe to share with that person. And who are the people that you'd like to go deeper with?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Who do you have in your life where there's a part of you that yearns for a deeper connection and maybe you've been too scared to initiate it?
So we've talked about what the blockages are. We've talked about what we need to create that space. So now the question becomes, how do I steer this conversation into deeper territory without making it weird and without forcing it, right? Because it might work to come over and say, like, do you think about death a lot?
Right.
It might also come off as just like a really weird. There were two ways that that could have gone for you, right? You could have been like, actually, I do. Or you could have been like, who the hell is this person?
Yeah, I could.
And how do I find the
back
away. Depth is a powerful thing, but you need a lot more than just a willingness to go deep and a real good question, right? Timing is important. Your tone, your tonality is going to be hugely important.
Attunement. You're reading the room. You're gauging through subtle cues, maybe that this feels like a suitable opening to try to make a bid to go deeper.
Yeah, because if we're not reading the room properly, there's the possibility that we come off as just someone who's way too intense.
Right. You don't just want to impose this on somebody, imposing depth or intimacy or vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You want to invite them in.
Yeah.
Whether you do it explicitly or whether you do it through a little bit and then you read the response, it's an invitation. And then if they meet you there, they've consented to actually go there with you.
Right. So we're not just ambushing them with weird questions where we're sort of feeling things out. And
an interrogator will torture depth out of somebody.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And they'll get them to share their deepest secrets and national secrets. And that's depth, but it's not connection in the way that you're after here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, and that's really, I mean, when we're talking about depth and vulnerability, connection is the inherent piece there.
Yeah. Or even without torture, like a skilled police investigator can coax a confession out of somebody to a crime.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to break down your walls, but that's like, it's very much a manipulation and you're not going to feel, you may not feel the kind of intimacy we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So it's, don't do stuff to people.
Yeah.
Invite them in.
What's a great way to invite somebody in? Questions are great, but I would say more than questions is like a genuine sort of curiosity. Instead of trying to think of deep questions and come across as deep and curate a deep personality, just get genuinely curious, right?
And get good at listening, right?
Yeah.
So. That being said, we can give you a few examples of questions that are better than, hey, how are you doing? Because how are you doing invites fine, thanks, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very rote and robotic and utterly meaningless.
And
it's more like a handshake than a conversation. It's a verbal handshake. My sister-in-law has one because she'll ask, what's green and growing in your world lately?
Oh, that's good. I like
that. So that was, it's cute, right? It's what's green and growing.
Yeah.
And it gave me pause when she first asked and prompted me to think, like, what's something I'm trying to nurture and grow?
Yeah.
And I think at the time it was my coaching business. That's green and growing. And it led to a conversation about something personal to me as opposed to just, how's it going?
Yeah.
Right?
I have a friend, Tiff, and she'll always ask, what's going on for you right now? Like, what's, truly she wants to know, like, what's in your world? What's in your space? How is Patrick doing? Like, tell me. I can feel that genuine curiosity and affection. And it makes talking to her really easy.
Right.
And it makes speaking with her really, really delightful because I just sense that. It's same as you're green and growing.
Yeah. And it's like the difference between how's it going versus how are you?
Yeah.
It's almost the same question in terms of the words, but it's a completely different question.
Mm-hmm.
You can also ask, what's been feeling really alive for you lately? What's something that you're looking forward to? Or what's been weighing heavily on you? Or what's something you've been chewing on lately? It's just questions that probe a little deeper and are inviting someone to share something meaningful. And it also, by asking even a slightly better question, you're not in this autopilot of, hey, how's it going? Fine, thanks. How are you? Also fine.
Yeah.
Or you could do that utterly mindlessly. You're not even thinking about the words because it's so automatic. Asking a slightly different question gets you present to the question you're asking.
Yeah.
And now you're actually listening to the answer. You're not just doing a well-choreographed dance. You're actually trying to connect to a person.
Yeah, you're making space for that authenticity, that realness.
Yeah. And then, so that's if you're, these are opening questions, mm-hmm. but if you're in a conversation with somebody and you're listening well, they'll give you little clues. Like someone says, hey, work's been really intense lately. You can brush past that and go, yeah, me too, man. Busy is the new normal.
There you go. Or, that's your surface level.
That's your surface level. Or you can say, oh, intense. What kind of intense? Like too much? Like too stressful? Like,
yeah.
You know what? Say more about intense. And you've already gone a level deeper just by cueing on something they expressed, a word, a phrase that points to an emotional experience.
Right.
Intense. Oh, there's some charge there. I'm curious, like say more about intense. And now you're inviting them to go a little deeper.
I love that one. Say more about, that's just like such a great way to follow whatever it is the person is saying, whatever's important to them, whatever's live for them in that moment.
Yeah.
And to just cut a layer deeper.
What I love about that is that it's the most open-ended invitation mm-hmm. for them to say more. It's, if I ask a specific question, it points you in a particular direction. But if I say, hey, just tell me more about that, say more about that,
yeah.
then I'm giving you an opportunity to share whatever more is for you.
Yeah.
I'm not guiding it. I'm just telling you that I'm paying attention and I'm curious.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to pull you in. I'm trying to
follow you. And then you want to read their response. Like in the example of, oh, work's been intense. Oh, what kind of intense? They'll go one of a few different ways. They might elaborate and start to share more, which is great. You're a level deeper.
Yep.
Or they might brush it off. Oh, you know, the usual. Okay. So you made a bid for them to share a little more and they declined the offer. That's fine too. It could be that that's not actually the trailhead you thought it might be.
Yep.
Or it could be they're not in the mood to go deeper. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's the key here is you offered an invitation and then they'll take it or they won't. And it's fine.
Yeah. It's like you said, they're your dance partner. You're not trying to pull something out of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Biggest one, go first.
Model what you want in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
That's one that we can dig in on a little bit more.
For
here.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to make someone feel safe, if you're the first person, you've modeled that, right? This, I am someone who wants this. I'm someone who you can do this with. Be careful not to just dump on them. You don't want to make this like a 20-minute trauma dump. You're modeling honesty. Again, it's not a performance. You're actually just being real with them.
You're opening up and being vulnerable. And that does several things. First, you're taking the risk first, rather than asking them to.
Right.
Right? Because if you just ask somebody a deeper, more probing question, you're asking them to be vulnerable. You haven't gone first, right? Whereas if you go first by sharing something a little bit vulnerable, like someone says, hey, how have you been? Or how's your week? Instead of saying, oh, the huge, you could say, oh, you know what? I've actually been really emotionally drained this week. Mm-hmm. Or I've been processing something that isn't quite sitting right with me. And you're giving them a little window into your world. It tells them, this is the kind of conversation I'd like to have. And I'm willing to, by me being vulnerable and going first, I'm demonstrating that I'm safe for you to be vulnerable with.
My brother is, when we were younger, would always watch me do stupid things first before he would do them. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm going to jump into the water. Okay. Yeah. You go first. And if you survive, then I'll do it too. So it's same sort of thing. We're just modeling that.
A quick side note on this one. This is, I'm particularly proud of this.
Yeah.
So years ago, I'd never had Vegemite. And I don't know, for people in the audience who've experienced Vegemite, it's this dark brown, dense vegetable paste that they're big on in Australia. Mm-hmm. It tastes kind of like if you took a bouillon cube and made a paste out of it, but with all the intensity of like, it's so salty and so intense. And like, I learned years later, the proper way to eat this is with a lot of butter and then a really thin layer of Vegemite. So you get a bit of that flavor.
A little tiny bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was curious, bought a little jar of it at the supermarket and tasted it like with a spoon.
Oh no.
And it was awful.
Yeah.
My sister comes home a little bit later. I'm like, you got to try this. It's so good. And now she knows me and she's like, I don't trust you. You first. So I took a spoonful of it, put it in my mouth and just faked how yummy it was. This was me going first. It was totally a trap, but it was worth it just to watch her do it next.
I played a show with my band in Austria, and one of the fellas loved Vegemite, and so we went back to his place after the show, and he's like, "You got to try it; it's the best." And same thing, and I just laid it on. I'll never eat Vegemite again.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't even with bread; it was like a teaspoon full of Vegemite directly in the mouth, and I would do it again. just to see the look on her face. Because it was so worth it. But back to going first. Not in the sadistic, manipulative way that I just described, mm-hmm. but by being vulnerable first, people will follow you. And you're setting the tone. Declaring is maybe too strong a word, but you're setting the stage for, hey, this is the kind of conversation that I would like this to be.
This is the kind of relationship I would like us to have.
Yeah. So going first is the best way that I know of.
Yeah. Oftentimes people are going to follow where you lead.
Definitely. And that's a good insight, right? If you look at the quality of the relationships, interactions that you have in your life, you're getting back what you're putting out there.
Yeah.
If you want more depth and closeness and vulnerability and connection, like be more of those things. And then magically, the same people around you will likely be more that way as well. You don't need to replace your friends.
No.
You just need to model the kind of interaction you want to have with them.
Yeah, I think that's very well put. In terms of other ways that we can open things up, there's a technique that we would call widen and then drop. So you're going to widen things out with something meaningful, and then you're going to drop a deeper question inside of that. And then that creates space for the person that you're with to answer that question. So example would be something like, you've been with your partner for a while now, right? And then the answer is yes. So now you've widened the conversation, right? We're talking about the partner. And then we drop in our question. What's something that you've learned about yourself through that relationship?
You want to be attuned, obviously, to how deep you can drop in a particular conversation with a particular person.
Sure.
But I think it's great. You're setting the stage with the opening statement or question, and then you're dropping in with a deeper question. Like, hey, I noticed you've moved around a lot in the last few years. The more shallow question might be like, what's that been like? Mm-hmm. Or you can probe a little deeper. Like, did any of those places ever really feel like home?
Mm.
And that leads to like, what is it for a place to feel like home? Or you're asking about something that's a little more intimate. Or you can share in the same way. Like, hey, I've changed jobs 3 times in the last 5 years, and I found it really unsettling. Having to find myself again in each of these new settings and cultures has been really kind of an exercise in searching for myself, for example. And then now you're sharing something that's more personal.
We talked a lot about the dance. We talked a lot about how this is not a science. And we talked about paying attention to energy and body language. And tone of voice. It's not just going to be people's words that's going to lead you in the direction of having a deeper engagement, having a more vulnerable conversation. So pay attention to those sorts of things too.
Hmm. Yeah, you can notice shifts in energy. Someone may be sharing something and their tone might change. They may look down and their tone drops or something, and you can say, hey, what just happened there? So being observant in real time, because often when somebody's sharing a story or an experience, we kind of follow them in our imagination to whatever events they're recalling.
Yeah.
And that's useful. But you want to toggle back and forth between that and noticing what's unfolding right in front of you. If someone's energy shifts or their emotional state shifts, you can notice it and say, hey, like, you got quiet there. Do you mind if I ask, like, what was going on for you in that moment?
Paying attention to your own body language can help in that way too.
Like,
I'm noticing about myself right now while we're recording this podcast, I had a moment where my energy level dropped and I glanced at the clock, and then it's, oh, I'm feeling tired and I want to be engaged with this. So I'm just going to call that out and mention it. And then, you know, we can get back to it. But you might notice something about yourself that you want to call out or call into the space as well that might help to just generate that space again.
Yeah, for sure.
One more thing to keep in mind is building trust with a person is probably going to be a slow build, right?
Yeah.
There are people who I know in my life I can have deep conversations with. That wasn't always the case. There's always a getting to know you phase. With some people, it might be accelerated. With some people, it might be slower.
Even the people that you are comfortable having deeper conversations with, not every conversation is going to be that way.
No.
But once you've gone to a certain level of depth with a person, you've now established that as a safe place that you can go.
Yeah.
You can tap back into that with that person whenever you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like having had a particular level of vulnerability or connection with somebody once, it's like a category shift. Now this is a person that I can do that with.
Yeah. So what comes to mind for me is my best friend from high school, Christopher, and another friend of ours, Peter, right? The three of us, we went through some stuff together. We had that. But when I first met them, it was just like, video games and stupid voices and dumb jokes.
Yeah, boy stuff.
Boy stuff. And as we got to grow together and to know one another, you know, now it's still video games and silly voices and dumb crap. But if I need to speak to one of them, instantly, they're there with me.
Right.
Right. And we're not doing dumb accents and we're not like it's they are there and they I can lean on them and I can and I know that no matter what I say, they're going to bear witness to
yeah
to my authenticity.
It's a gear you can shift into. Like having been there once, you can go there again. Yeah. So
I'll say so here's the other thing that I know about this. Those are not the only people that I can do that with.
Exactly.
You're someone I can do that with.
Right.
Right. And I've known you way less time than I've known them.
Yeah.
So like this is something that you can repeat. This is something that you can build.
Yeah, you can scale this. You can replicate it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to take a long time.
No.
At all. I'll give the counterexample. You and I have both been on some intense weekend-long personal development experiences, sure. workshops of various types. And so in that setting, you meet a group of people who might be strangers at the beginning of the weekend, but 2 days later, in the group space that gets created there, like you've bared your soul, you've opened up, people have cried and supported each other in all sorts of ways.
Yeah.
So that can happen right away. And then from that point on, anytime you run into or spend time with the people that you've shared that experience with, you can drop into that level of depth and it's almost expected. That's kind of the precedent you set. It sets the tone. So,
well, because when we're running when we're facilitating those weekends, we have a very short period of time. We have 2 to 2.5 days to really create value for these people.
For a bunch like the men's work, bunch of men come in super guarded on a Friday night, not knowing what they got into.
Yep.
And by Saturday night, they've often shared things I've never shared with anybody. And there've been tears and there's been anger and sadness and joy and vulnerability and really deep emotional transformation.
Yeah.
Fast. Mm-hmm. So this stuff we're sharing is not theoretical, right?
No.
The safety, the go first, the vulnerability, the asking deeper questions, the declaring, I'd like to have a deeper kind of conversation with you, right? Naming what's normal. Normally we keep it superficial. I want this to be deeper. Here's what that means.
Yeah.
And you can accelerate the process consciously by creating the right conditions and being comfortable taking the lead and being comfortable with your own vulnerability and equally being comfortable holding space for someone else in whatever their experience is.
Yeah. And like you said, when we run into those people again, we can drop into that fairly instantly. And there's just that rapport and there's that space. And then again, you can have, you joke around and do that too. It's so nice. It's beautiful when you have a relationship with someone and you just have all of those levels that you can tap into whenever, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's with a lot of them, it's almost weird if you keep it too superficial
because
it's like, wait a minute.
You're someone I know I can go deep with.
Yeah. And you can have a barbecue and keep it shallow, but you also, even in that setting, depth doesn't have to mean tears or trauma.
No.
It can just mean it's just a little more real.
Yeah, what's real for you? What's going on in your world? What's going on in your life, right? And it's not just, work's okay. Like I'm getting something genuine from you. I'm getting something authentic from you. Like, you know what? My father's not doing well right now and we've been in the hospital and that's just really on my mind, but like, you know, things are okay otherwise. Like that level of engagement.
I'm reminded of a weekend last spring, about a year ago. I was at my girlfriend's cottage, and we had another couple joining us, a couple of friends of ours. And this couple, one of the things that's so great about them is they're very self-aware and they're very open about just sharing about the real dynamics of their relationship. And they would kind of go first and they would talk about, I don't remember the specific examples, but it'd be like, oh, you know, one of the things I do when we're arguing is I tend to get very this way or that way. And then she responds this way. And like, there's just a lot of disclosure from them. And that gave us permission to share about like what's really going on in our relationship. And it normalized the whole thing.
Right.
And it was refreshing and nourishing because there's just so much more substance to it than just talking superficially, you know, and then 20 minutes later in the conversation, we were laughing our faces off at, you know, whether or not two different words rhymed. And so half of us thought that they rhymed and the other half thought that it was preposterous to say that this rhymes with that. I forget what the words were.
Okay.
But it's like, so goofy stuff and then deep stuff. But having those places you can go to with certain people is really nice.
Yeah. So a couple of just go-to questions to keep on hand if you need some openings or to just drop in. What's something that's been quietly shaping you lately?
I like that.
Yeah. I liked yours. What was it? What's green and growing?
Yeah, that's green and my growing. Sister-in-law gave me that one.
Yeah. When have you felt most like yourself lately?
That's a good one.
Yeah. What are you carrying right now? I think you said this one, right? What are you carrying right now that's really weighing on you that people might not know about?
Has anything surprised you about yourself?
Oh, that's a good one. I like
that. Right? That's a good one because it's you're inviting someone to reflect on what they've learned about themselves.
Mm.
Or what's something that you're working through that you haven't talked much about? You may not open with that, but it's the kind of question that can be interesting.
Yeah. And you don't have to use these. You don't have to use all of them. You don't have to use any of them. You might find one that works for you.
You can also do a Google search for deeper questions to start conversations with. There are a few, they're like card games out there where it's a deck of cards.
I have one of those. Yeah. 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 I have a deck of cards that's just like, it's 52 different questions that you can ask to just like start
to take a conversation a little deeper.
Yeah, those are cool.
So you don't have to think these up. Other people have done the thinking for you.
Yep.
I had a dinner party with some friends in January and there were 11 or 12 of us.
Right.
And we wanted to have a deeper kind of conversation among this group of friends. And so I found, I don't know, say 40 of these questions and printed them out on little cards. And went to the restaurant early and put two of them under, like at each place setting. And then, you know, I guess it was probably between the appetizer and the main course. It was, hey, one of the things we wanted to do here was encourage a deeper level of intimacy and connection in this conversation. So take a look under your plate. You'll find two questions. Pick your favorite one and then read it out loud and then answer it. And, I'll go first. So I went first. And modeled it and we went around taking turns and it made for a really nice conversation.
That's cool. I think that's a great sort of reminder too, that like this stuff doesn't have to be heavy, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be doom and gloom and sadness and tears. It can go that way, but vulnerable and deep conversations it's also just like getting to know somebody on that real level. So
yeah, there's another access point, perhaps a way in. We talked a lot about asking someone else questions. Which is, it kind of puts the burden on them to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
You can also share something with someone that maybe you haven't shared with them before. So that dinner party we were just talking about, one of the cards that I had was pick someone else at the table and share something that you admire about them that you haven't told them before.
Hmm.
And it's such a simple thing because I've got plenty of things that I admire about the people in my life that I just for whatever reason haven't shared. And so I took the opportunity and shared something with a friend of mine about something I admire that I didn't tell him about. And, you know, it instantly creates a deeper connection with that person. So look for where have you been stingy with compliments or acknowledgements or expressions of love and admiration for the people in your life. And that's an easy one, is just share something meaningful that you appreciate or admire in somebody or you're proud of them for.
One of the greatest gifts that you can give to a person in your life is just telling them what they've done that you're proud of. And
totally.
I've really taken that to heart. Like I really try to tell people when I'm proud of them. If you don't say it, people,
they don't know.
Yeah. They don't know what you're not saying, right?
Yeah. That's an easy one.
Very easy. Yeah. And not a whole lot to be fearful about there, right?
Yeah. That's another one. It's low risk, right? This doesn't always have to be vulnerable and risky in that sense. It's just, It can be entirely pleasant, but it takes something to a deeper level.
Yeah. So what I just said there was it doesn't always have to get messy and it doesn't always have to be emotional. It doesn't always have to be awkward. But what happens if that does come up in the space? What if it gets weird?
Hmm. You've got some options. You know, you can just be with it without having to change anything. Or, you know, if you sense that... the other person is wanting an off ramp, you can follow their lead. If they're wanting to change the subject or divert, like don't force them to stay in a place that they've made it clear they want to get out of.
Right. Something that you mentioned earlier that I think we can bring back is calling things out when they happen.
Right? Yes.
Like I'm feeling a certain way, or you just had an energy shift, or what was that pause about? What was that silence about? So in the same way, if things get awkward or things get emotional, I think that we can go back to the advice that Chris gave us, which was if something shifts,
name it.
Name it.
Yeah, you know, feels like that just got weird.
Yeah.
And just name it and normalize it, right? Like, oh, well, this is awkward.
I think that's it, right? And it's, we're not making a joke. We're not trying to crack the tension or anything else. It's just like, we're just naming it. Like, oh, wow, that got really intense there for a second.
Yeah.
Are you okay with that?
You're kind of naming, if there's an elephant in the room, like, oh, did you notice an elephant just joined us in the conversation?
Right. Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
What do we do? Do you want to keep talking, or should we escort the elephant outside?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you may not say it in a joking way, but there's something about naming elephants that's really often all you need to do about the elephant is like name it. Hey, this is Doug. This is my elephant.
And we can continue to talk with Doug present.
Yeah. Because what makes it weird is when you're aware of it and not saying anything about it. Now it's this thing that is visceral.
Yeah, when
present,
you're dancing around it, that's
but you're
that's
pretending
almost,
it's not there. And that's where the weirdness comes from.
Well, and that goes back to that sort of performance and that surface level thing, right? If we're not naming it, if we're just kind of ignoring it, we're not experiencing that depth of conversation anymore because we're just trying to ignore the elephant in the
room. It's that it introduces a layer of pretense.
Yeah.
Right? Which is the opposite of authenticity and vulnerability. So just naming what's true, naming what's actually happening and unfolding in the moment maintains the intimacy because it's you're in touch with what's true and you're expressing that I feel comfortable enough being honest with you about what I'm experiencing or about what I'm sensing in the space versus, oh, this got weird and now let's pretend it's not weird, which subcommunicates, I no longer trust us to be in touch with the truth in this conversation. And now it's not authentic and it's not vulnerable. Now it's a looking good dance again.
Right.
Right. So just naming it keeps it real.
Yeah. Stay in it. Stay in the emotional, stay in the awkward, stay in the messy and call it out.
Just talk about what's actually happening because that's really another way that we connect.
Yeah. So some techniques that we can use, some guidelines. Take a breath before you try and fix things. Someone shares something tender, something painful, something honest, something raw. The instinct can be to say things like, you're going to be okay.
You're going to get through this. Yeah. It's all going to work out. This too shall pass.
All that stuff, right?
All of that stuff.
And
those are all attempts to fix something and an attempt to get a person into a different state than the one they're in. And don't do that.
You have probably had a situation where you have shared something that has been deep and meaningful and heavy and gotten that kind of a response. It's really irritating. It can feel dismissive of your feelings or of the situation that you're in. Don't try and fix things.
You're not trying to fix or change someone else's experience. You're just being with them in it.
Yeah.
That's it. They've got permission to feel their feelings fully and not have to do it alone.
Instead of saying something like, you know, oh, you're going to make it through this, thank you for sharing that. That makes a lot of sense. I can totally understand. Thank you.
Yeah. Or instead of like, don't feel so bad, it's, oh, this must be really hard for you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I imagine that must be difficult and I'm sorry you're going through that. Thank you for sharing it with me. You're not trying to change anything. You're just acknowledging what's happening. Grateful that they trusted you enough to be vulnerable. Also, silence is your friend. Like, you don't necessarily have to say anything. Sometimes if someone is having whatever their experience is, just be.
Yeah, a lot of times people feel awkward with silences and uncomfortable with silences. If you can get to a space where you feel comfortable sitting in silence with somebody, that's going to be huge in deepening your connection and developing intimacy with a person.
And if you don't know what to say, you can say that. You know?
Oh, that's really good. I like that.
You know what? I don't have the words right now. I don't know what to say, but I'm glad you told me that. Just know that I'm here. You don't have to have the magic words. You don't have to fix anything. You just have to be there. Be present.
Searching for the right words can kind of pull you out of that.
Totally. And now your attention is on, what do I need to do in order to look good?
Right.
And
we talked about being present, right? That was a big part of building that intimacy.
Yeah.
So if I'm thinking about what I need to say in order to make things right or make that silence comfortable or make someone feel okay. I'm no longer dropped into that conversation.
Right.
I'm out of it.
Here's another one that I've heard conversation about this recently, and I can kind of see it from both sides. Sometimes when somebody shares a difficult experience with you, there can be a tendency to want to relate by sharing a similar experience that you've gone through.
Okay.
Right? Like, oh, you know what? That sucks. You know, something similar happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people online saying, don't do that. Don't pivot and make it about you.
Yeah.
And I can kind of get that, but I can also see the value in sharing a personal experience of pain or vulnerability to demonstrate to the other person that they're not alone. So
you get it.
I don't think there's a hard and fast rule about don't ever do this or always do this. I think it's read the room and be clear on like what your intention is.
Part of that is knowing the person, but you're right. It can feel like trying to divert focus back to yourself.
Right. Enough about you, back to me.
Yeah, yeah. Or trying to break the tension, right? Oh, I'm sorry you feel that. Like, let me put this into the space so you feel better. It can be us trying to fix again. So mm-hmm. it can sort of come across as that. Or even, you know, in the worst case scenario, like it might feel like one-upsmanship. So
right.
Yeah, I think you're right to say like that's going to be situational.
Yeah.
You're going to have to use your awareness around that.
Well, I had an example of that come up today. A friend of mine shared something on Facebook that I didn't know, and his father's dealing with lung cancer.
Right.
And so he posted a thing about a long fundraising bike ride that he's doing. And
yeah.
And so this was news to me. So I shared something in the comments saying, oh, I didn't realize your dad was dealing with that. I'm sorry to hear he's going through all the chemo and how's he doing? And, you know, I lost my father to cancer several years ago. And so part of the thought was, oh, I could point to that, but it didn't feel right. I didn't want to make it about me, partly because he already knows that, right? So there's no need for me
to... So there's no need for you to say it.
You know, this isn't new. It's not... I don't need to share that in order for him to know that I get it.
Yeah.
And so I just kept the focus on him and his dad. I thought I'd mention that because it's a thing that we sometimes do.
Yeah, no, I think that's good.
We share a personal experience. And sometimes that helps and sometimes maybe not. So you need to use your judgment.
Other things that might make things feel weird in the moment. There can be a tendency to want to apologize for being human.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right? I'm sorry.
Like,
I'm crying.
I'm crying right now and I'm apologizing while I'm crying.
Yeah.
Don't apologize for being human. If you get choked up, if your voice cracks, tears come on, that's not you being dramatic. That's you experiencing that rawness and processing it.
Yeah.
You're just showing up. That means you're connected to what's happening and what you're speaking about.
You're just being real. If you think about a time when someone has gotten upset and cried in front of you and then they're apologizing for it, there's never a need for the apology, right? Sort of says it's not valid for me to be expressing my feelings this way. And it's kind of the whole point.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so don't apologize for being willing to be vulnerable in front of someone else. And if someone gets emotional and starts apologizing to you, instead of saying, oh, don't apologize, you can take it a level deeper and say, hey, look, thank you for being this
there
vulnerable with me. Like,
yeah.
Never mind, don't apologize. That can sound like you're placating them. It's, no, this is a depth of connection that I really cherish and value. And thank you for trusting me enough to be raw with me like this. It means a lot to me.
Yeah.
Sometimes the closest we ever feel to somebody is when they're, you know, they're sobbing and their mascara's running and there's snot. And it's like, you know, at our least put together is when we are often the most connected, right? Be willing for things to be messy. You got one precious life and it's an opportunity to stop playing it so damn safe. And you'll be fine. Make messes. Be willing to make messes and then trust that you can clean them up and live a little, right? Like, honestly, when do you feel most alive? Some of the moments of the deepest connection with people, the richest, most authentic conversations you ever have, if you're anything like me, those are the moments when you feel the most alive. So don't deny yourself that and take a risk. It's totally worth it.
I mean, those are the parts of a relationship, a friendship that I cherish the most as well, right?
Like
when you have that deep sense of connection, like that's what makes the laughs more hearty when you have them. Because you're with someone that you're truly connected with.
Yeah.
That's what makes the silly times just like that much more precious. And
for sure. And what you're doing by having these experiences is you're broadening the horizon of human experiences that you're allowing yourself to have, it enriches the human experience for you. It's a broader palette of experiences that you've gone through and lived through and even developed some facility with and capacity with.
Yeah.
And it's just more places you feel comfortable going.
Lastly, knowing when things have come to a conclusion, knowing how to close things in a way that's gentle.
Right.
And
how to transition out of this kind of conversation and back into either something lighter or how to wrap it up in a way that's natural.
What comes to mind for me is, you know, something like what you said earlier, like, thank you for trusting me with this.
Hmm.
This really meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
You mean a lot to me. And just thank you.
But yeah.
Like if you were, are there any ways that you close conversations like that? Anything that you, any go-tos?
I think very similarly, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that with me.
Yeah.
And if I'm wrapping up a coaching engagement with somebody that I've been having conversations weekly or every other week for say 6 months, like I make a point of saying, hey, it takes a lot to open up and be vulnerable with another human being. And I want you to know, I don't take that lightly.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one coaching engagement that went on it was like a 6 month engagement. And
yeah.
Like sometimes we would go long, we would be scheduled for 45 minutes and we would go 90. We would double our time, but it just needed the space. And then we would have to wrap it up. And thank you for showing up authentically.
Yeah.
And sometimes too, people don't want to continue talking. Like I've had that happen in coaching engagements as well, where someone has sort of said like, I don't think I want to dive into this any longer. I think like, can we table this until next week or next month or whenever
for
it was?
Sure.
And yeah, something like, you know, like we don't have to continue talking about this right now. And when you want to pick this back up, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what that says is I hear you. There's no rush here. We've got time. We've got space. And I'm in it with you when you want to pick that thread back up. But
yeah,
we're wrapping this up for
it
now.
It says whatever level of depth or vulnerability that you want is welcomed but not required.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So we unpacked a lot there. So again, let's throw it back to you, right? What's your default move when things get weird and emotional? Do you lean into that awkwardness or do you pull away? How comfortable are you with awkwardness and emotional stuff going on?
How comfortable are you with silence in a conversation?
Yeah. How comfortable are
just
you with
allowing
silence?
A pause, allowing a moment to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Next time that something comes up, how might it feel for you just to stay in it?
Yeah, just be with it, stay in it. And that's how you develop the capacity. You expand your emotional capacity and you make yourself larger as a safe container for a broader palette of feelings and for a broader range of feeling intensity.
Yeah.
You just become a larger container and someone that can hold space for more for people and practice it. And the more that you practice this, the stronger and the larger your capacity will be.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of, I got a cold plunge and, you know, the first time I used it, it's like a minute. The cold plunge is, it's between 3 and 5 degrees Celsius, which is like, it's like less than 40 degrees Fahrenheit. It's between 35 and 39 Fahrenheit.
It's
cold.
It's cold.
Like just above freezing. So the first time it's a minute and you feel like you're dying. Your body is screaming at you like, this is not safe.
Oh, you did a minute your first time? I did 15 seconds. And my body was like, nope, shut it down. Get out.
Yeah. The second time, I think I did 2 minutes.
Okay.
And then I did 3.
Look at you. I only did 30 seconds my second time.
And now I can do 5 minutes and it's no problem. But it's that gradually increasing your exposure to something that's initially uncomfortable and then it's totally fine. And then it even becomes enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. Another takeaway here is we talked about when things get messy, when things get awkward. To summarize it, if you can just make room for a person and be open while things are getting messy, then people walk away knowing that you're someone that they can trust.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. Yeah, for sure. And it's not about getting anything perfectly here. It's about being, in a lot of ways, it's just being with the messiness and the imperfection of it and the humanity of it.
Yeah.
That's worth doing. Cultivating that capacity is really, it's really worthwhile.
Yeah. All right, let's bring it home. So we walked through a lot. We walked through a lot about the steps it takes to go deep. It's not about asking better questions.
It's not just about that.
It's about creating depth and creating an open space for depth. And it's not just for other people in your life. This is something that will be for you as well. We talked about confidence.
Definitely. You become much more comfortable in your own skin in a much broader array of situations.
Yeah.
You'll experience a lot less fear in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Writ large. It's pretty great, actually.
Yeah. So practically, what's that going to look like? Listening. We've got a great podcast about the different levels that you can listen at.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard it yet, maybe check it out.
Five levels of listening.
Five levels of listening. Yeah. Creating spaces to have these kinds of talks. We talked about being the person who goes first.
Huge.
Right? We talked about being the person who stays present in the conversation, even if that gets awkward, even if that gets emotional. Practice for the week. Pick one person, and instead of giving them a hi, how are you? Let's try something.
Try one of the deeper questions.
That's deeper. Yeah.
Alternative assignment. If someone asks you, hey, how's it going? Rather than just answering unconsciously, yeah, I'm good. How are you? Take a moment, pause, and actually share something more meaningful. Hey, how's it going? You know what? It's actually been a tough week. Or you know what? It's been a great week. I'm really proud of something that happened. But like, give them the non-superficial answer. Share something real.
Yeah. Take a moment this week and actually drop in.
Try to go deeper with somebody. Yeah. See how it goes.
Do this.
If you've been enjoying this video or any of our videos, like, subscribe, forward it to friends. It helps us out.
It helps a lot. Yeah. And if you want to work together, you can get in contact with us through our website, through LinkedIn. And if not, just thanks for being here with us. And until next time.
We hope this was useful. Thanks for tuning in.